Good morning and welcome to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. Thank you for joining us in a coffee pod. We're recording the day before the Bills game against the New Orleans Saints in Buffalo on a Saturday. Dan, how are we doing?
Doing good. Excited for the Bills welcoming the Saints to Highmark tomorrow. Also excited to talk about where we think this team stands 3 weeks into the season. This is usually the time of the year, JJ, where I start to get my bearings as a stats guy. Like one or two games, not a real great sample size, but once you start to get into weeks 3 and 4, you're far enough past the preseason to where you kind of see what teams want to put on film as you're about to make that turn into the second quarter of the season, where now other teams start to respond. So I think we're getting in some good data about the Bills, about where they're at realistically and where they need to go to be successful and claim that ultimate goal we want them to at the end of the season. So I'm stoked to talk about it, dude.
Yeah, man. And I think that, you know, to start that conversation, we have to look back a little bit into the Buffalo Bills game against the Miami Dolphins, our third game of the year. The Bills are now 3-0, and things are looking good, especially considering this weekend, one of the Kansas City Chiefs or Baltimore Ravens, who many would consider the top contenders for that number one seed in the AFC, one of them is going to be 1-3, while the other one moves to 2-2.
Yes, that game is fascinating to me for a bunch of different reasons. Lots of implications to that, but I don't know, man. Is it weird to root for both teams to lose?
Like a tie because it muddies up their opportunities, yeah. Like,
is that an outcome that we can get from that game, right? I mean, do you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, we could talk about that. Yeah.
Just our thoughts on it real quick. Who do you think is more likely to bounce back after that game? Like there's the whole who needs it more thing. But the reality is both of those teams are so talented. With the Chiefs getting some pieces back here later on in the season. Like, I don't know that this is a nail in the coffin for either squad, but who do you think, if they lose, has the better chance to bounce back?
Chiefs, track record, coaching. Yeah. Track record, coaching, key injuries and suspensions and things like that. I think that they have the better chance because the Ravens, in a lot of ways, are at peak form this part of the season, even though they've not performed very well. In a few games, they also haven't been completely wiped out by their injury bug that they sometimes get yet. So I think we're seeing them where they're at. I think we're seeing a lesser version of the Chiefs of where they will be.
Yes.
So
for the record, I think both teams can recover from a loss this weekend, but I actually think it's the Ravens that might have the easier road only because of the division they play in. Mm-hmm. I think if the Ravens take the L this week and to your point, remain kind of healthy. I know Kyle Van Noy is banged up. They haven't had a healthy Isaiah Likely though. Honestly, that offense doesn't really like center around him. You know, he's a nice piece to have. But I think that division with Burrow being down, with the Browns having a really great defense, but not really knowing who they are on offense. And then the Steelers, I mean, the Steelers defense, and I'm going to regret this because the Bills will play the Steelers this season. The Steelers defense looks old and kind of washed. Mm-hmm. And that secondary is very banged up. And Aaron Rodgers is playing the exact same game after game for Pittsburgh, where it's the same amount of tight window throws, same amount of turnover worthy throws. It's just a matter of, can your defense take advantage of the way Rodgers plays now, which is kind of sloppy. And that to me is too much of an inconsistent factor to be able to count on as well. So I think for the Ravens, if they drop to 1-3, I think they do have the ability at least to squeak out something in their division because of the relative weakness compared to their squad.
Yeah, no, I think that that's true. That's true. And I do think we're seeing a resurgent AFC West against the Chiefs, which I think Bills fans have been waiting. We've been waiting. We are the main characters in Lord of the Rings waiting for Gandalf to come over the crest of the hill at dawn with the Riders of Rohan. And those are the Broncos and the Chargers. Like, thank you for arriving finally to the fight. We've been holding this keep all night long.
Exactly. Oh God. I'm so glad we went in this little diversion just for that reference alone. Love those movies. Holy crap. All right, man. Well, as we talk about in division rivals here, that's a perfect segue to talk about Miami, but JJ, I want to do it a little bit different because to your point, we're recording about a day before week 4 begins. And for Bills Mafia, I mean, pretty much every way you could break down that closer than expected Miami game has been broken down. So I kind of want to take a step back, being that was the the third week of the season. We now have a pretty decent sample size of where the Bills are at from multiple angles on this squad. And rather than go through an offense, defense, special teams recap, I want to do something a little bit different. I want to talk about some individual contributors and individual units that the Bills had hoped either would take a step or maintain a high level of play this season. And after 3 weeks and after that Miami game, it's the perfect place to check in with some of those folks. So I'd like to do something I call better, same, or worse. I'm going to give you a player, or I'm going to give you a unit or a situation on the squad, JJ, and you're going to tell me if they're performing better, the same, or worse compared to preseason hopes and their performance last season. Sound good?
Perfect. Let's run this thing.
All right. I'm going to start with an easy one. Josh Allen. Better, same, or worse?
Better. He has looked sharper. He's looked like he's had the answers quicker in the down. He looks like he... I haven't seen him absolutely blow a protection call at the line and then get lit up, you know, on a corner blitz that he wasn't anticipating. I think that the line has actually been, we'll get to the line, but Josh Allen has been better. I think he looks every bit the MVP of the league, and like he has complete control of this offense. I have not been more happy with Josh Allen as my quarterback than I am at this exact moment in time, because he's looked sharp. We're waiting on the downfield passing. That needs to come.
And I want to talk about that a little bit. I want to talk about a little bit of that later on, because I've got one here on the third down offense and the third down defense where I think we can squeeze some things in there. I agree with you, though. Josh is playing better than he did last year in his MVP season. He's number one in EPA per play amongst all QBs, number one in EPA per individual dropback as well. And JJ, he's doing it with a ton of second read, second reaction throws. And we'll get to this pass catcher room in a minute, because we're going to talk about a couple of those guys. On average, they are getting more separation than they did last season at the same time. 3.8 yards of average separation against the nearest defender to last season at the same time, it was 3.3 yards per average separation. But Josh is still having to hang on to the ball, go off script, and create more in the passing game, particularly to get those explosive plays that we have been kind of yearning for this team to unlock. And defenses have found a way, like Miami did, in key situations, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, and more. If you can get the Bills in that situation, they are just blanketing our wide receivers, and there's still a lack of separation overall that they are failing to attain, which is forcing Josh to improv in the pocket. I mean, I think this season, JJ, he ranks number 7 in second reaction throws this season and second read throws this season. Like, there's just not a lot there on his first read. And this isn't a case of Josh being skittish in the pocket like we've seen in the past. This is a professional, cool, calm, collected Josh assessing the field and knowing that he's got to go to alternate options because his first read is not there. By comparison, and I can't believe I'm saying this, MVP candidate Daniel Jones, 71% of his completions are coming off of his first read. Steichen is doing a great job for him of scheming guys open, giving him quick, decisive reads in the structure of the offense. And Josh doesn't have that yet. And I think it's a twofold issue, which is going to sound crazy for a team that scores 30 points a game. The issue to me feels like the pass catcher room still hasn't evolved to where we need it to. I'm getting separation. But then also, I mean, Brady is a great OC, but this has always been the thing we've wondered if he can develop. Can he develop a downfield passing game? Can he develop a passing game that attacks multiple levels of the defense? And we haven't seen him do that yet to that extent.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And also, when you chucklingly said, you know, with Daniel, MVP candidate Daniel Jones, the wide receivers on the Colts are Josh Downs, Ashton Doolin, Anthony Gould, A.D. Mitchell, who I think we both like, Alec Pierce, who's been okay, solid, and Michael Pittman, who's a very good receiver.
He's,
I think,
very
that
good.
Yeah, so like, but that's the thing is, like, none of those people are absolute soul-crushing talents in this league, right? Like, they're
not
solid.
Jamar Chase.
There's not a Jamar Chase, a Tyreek Hill, a Jalen Waddle among them. They are, you know, solid, if not spectacular, which I think is a good way that a lot of people might describe the Bills wide receiver room. So it's not like he's beating all the coverage looks with this initial separation because he has these magnificent talents who cannot be covered. And so I think that your point carries a lot, which is if Josh Allen has to look for a second window every time, or has to look for something to break down in coverage every time, that's a problem. Is that a problem of design?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Despite all that, I think we both agree he's playing at a higher level than he did last season, which is absolutely scary if you're the rest of the league. All right, JJ, let's move on. Next up, James Cook, better, same, or worse from last year?
Absolutely better. I think he just looks smooth, decisive. He's in and out of his cuts. He brought back the physicality I think everyone was shocked to see him bring last year. When it comes to, you know, I think he's one of the top, he's top five or top 10 in yards after contact, you know, per play, which is not what you'd expect of somebody sub 200 pounds as a running back, because he's kind of lanky in his frame. He's not Saquon Barkley. Yeah.
He's number four in the league in average yards per carry after contact.
Yep. And which is just, it's amazing for, you know, somebody of his size, stature, and his running style. Even I think that it's something that he's developed that no team drafting or looking at James Cook coming out of Georgia would have expected him to be able to do.
Yeah, without a doubt. His rushing yards total over expectation through 3 weeks, a plus 82, according to NFL Next Gen Stats, which is like, that takes into account, for those of you at home who aren't familiar with the stat, it takes into account blocking, right? If all things were equal on blocking, how far above expectation is he gaining? And that gives you a good indication that, yes, there is a great marriage between this offensive line and the running back, but the running back is carrying his load and then some. We talked about him being number four in the league in yards per carry after contact. He is also number four in the league in rush yards over expectation. And, you know, JJ, they really need James Cook in this rushing offense. They've given him a larger percentage of the snap share. He's gone from about 49-48% last season at the same time to now 62%. Of the snap share in this running back room. They're using him more effectively in the red zone and on third down as well. I mean, he's on pace, I think, for like 350 touches.
Yeah.
That's gonna regress to the mean at some point, but they've really needed James Cook in this rushing offense because Ray Davis hasn't looked great on his carries. That decisiveness that you mentioned with Cook isn't there with Davis at this point. And I think a thing that we're not talking about as much is that teams are really keying in on the Josh Allen scramble drill now. Josh's rushing yards over expectation, minus two for the season. Teams are really aware of where he is, especially in pure passing downs, and they're doing a great job keeping contain on him. So the traditional run game has needed absolutely to be a piece of this offense's success early on in the season, and Cook is a big reason why it is. So I agree with you, dude. I think better. Absolutely better.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about the pass catchers. Let's start with Dalton Kincaid. Lots of, I wouldn't say expectations, but a lot of like, dude, this has got to be the year where you do something. Where are you at with Kincaid so far?
So
better,
I think
same or worse?
I mean, through three games, he's had some of his highest target percentage, highest catch percentage, highest yards after catch. He's doing excellent because he's being focused on as a key piece of the offense, and he's delivering, even if it's only two or three catches per game. Like, I think that matters. He's been in the end zone. I think that it's what we always kind of wanted to see. We never needed Dalton Kincaid to be prime Travis Kelce with 12 targets for eight catches and 100 plus yards, two touchdowns. We wanted that, but we don't need it with this offense. Everyone eats James Cook. There's enough talents other than Dalton Kincaid. We just need him to be better. And I think he is better as a weapon offensively. I think that he's miles better as a blocker. And that has been the thing I've been most impressed by, is that the Bills are not being forced to take him out and plug Dawson Knox in on certain key rushdowns. They are letting Dalton Kincaid do those pins on the edge, the pin pull concepts. They're letting him clean out the trash in the slot, being a heavy slot. And that, I think, has shown dividends. And we'll see how the league adjusts, right? In these coming weeks, we'll see how defensive coordinators adjust to that, because I think that the light box percentage when Dalton Kincaid is on the field has been significantly higher because they don't expect him to be doing those things. But then in the 12 and 13 personnel sets with two and three tight ends, respectively, the Bills are still running, of course. You know, those are pretty heavy sets. And he's doing more than I think we would have expected from him in terms of cleaning out bigger bodies, linebackers, and even some, you know, helping out with some linemen.
Without a doubt. And those 13 personnel sets that the Bills have been rolling out there, I feel like they're still in the beta phase with a lot of that. And I think the key to unlocking the ability to take some shot plays downfield out of that formation is going to be Kincaid. It feels like this is a ramp up for him, particularly in those formations, JJ. He's now, I wouldn't say a proven concept as a blocker, but good enough to where he's no longer the liability he was, which is going to hopefully let Brady unlock some of the passing ability out of those heavier sets. I mean, last season, the Bills were equally efficient running and passing out of their jumbo sets. They have largely replaced that Alec Anderson sixth offensive lineman with these 13 personnel sets. And it feels like they've, and it doesn't just feel like they have, almost run exclusively out of that set. But there is another wrinkle I think they can develop, and a lot of it is because of Kincaid's continued growth arc. 81% catch rate, which is far and away beyond the 52% he was at last year. His overall DVOA is 31.1%, which amongst tight ends in the league currently ranks sixth in the league, just behind a few other, few other notable names. He's having a really great bounce back season. And most importantly, JJ, the yak is there. 16.2 yards per reception on yak, which is what he was always going to be. Find that soft spot in the zone. And then transition to a runner with the ball as quickly as you can. And he is doing that to great effect so far through the first 3 weeks. All right, man. Another pass catcher for you. Then I want to start talking a little bit about defense.
Perfect.
Keon Coleman, a guy who we have regularly pointed to as needing to be someone that becomes that deep threat, boundary threat for the Buffalo Bills. Better, same, or worse after 3 weeks?
Same. Same as late season Keon Coleman, who sort of disappeared at stretches. I think that he has done more in terms of the quick, like he's had a few really nice quick release slant games, contested catch situations through the first three games. It's just such a minimal sample size because it's been like three or four targets per game. But I think he's been there when they've needed him. But some of the same problems that you and I pointed to when he was, even before he showed up on the team as a rookie prospect coming out, are still there. Like, he's getting flagged for pushing off offensive, a pass interference. He is occasionally just completely blanketed in coverage to make no window available for Josh Allen to throw the ball. And then on top of that, he has not been a deep kind of deep threat to this point. He's not been able to stack his coverage and get behind them.
Yes, I think the temptation might have been to say better because he is better in a couple of key metrics here. Like, his catch rate has skyrocketed relative to him. It was sitting at points last season at the same time in the year between 47 and 50%. His catch rate's now about 78%. So he is, and I know he had that notable drop against Miami, and then after that, they literally stopped throwing him the ball in week three. But his catch rate has improved. He was so huge in that comeback against Baltimore. And I think they want to use him. He's averaging six targets per game, which is number one out of that wide receiver room, more than even Khalil Shakir at this point. And again, that's went after the Miami game in week three when they stopped using him, I think after like that drop in the second quarter. So he's still leading the team in targets. He's a guy they so need to unlock. But I agree with you at this point. It's the same. Despite those boosts in metrics, he has not ultimately become that deep boundary threat that they really need to take the roof off of opposing defenses. And it shows, as we talked about, with Josh constantly needing to look for second windows and the lack of explosives coming out of the passing game in structure, right? In structure. Coleman has got to be a piece of that. But, his separation numbers still aren't great. He can't seem to get off the line of scrimmage clean in press man situations. Teams just have a playbook for how they're going to guard him. And until there is some individual development with Coleman, where he becomes a little bit better in physical situations off the line of scrimmage, or again, if Brady can figure out a way to scheme him more open off the line, put him in some stack situations, put him in that power slot, put him in a motion, just anything to get this guy a free release off the line, as opposed to right now, he's lining up at that X boundary wide receiver position 81% of the time, one-on-one with an opposing DB. He's just never going to be truly successful in that scenario. You know who he reminds me of, JJ?
Who's that?
Do you remember Tyler Boyd, the big, powerful slot for Cincinnati back in the day?
Yeah, yep. loved Tyler Boyd's game later in his career.
Yeah, listen, he had T. Higgins and he had Ja'Marr Chase also taking a lot of attention off. So it's not an apples to apples comparison, but I mean, he was a big, slower wide receiver that struggled to get separation. Cincinnati shifting him into the slot literally changed his career, his career forever. And you just wonder if Keon Coleman needs a similar schematic change.
Well, and to me, I have a question of whether or not they're not doing that because they haven't yet given up hope that he's going to be able to learn to use his physicality to break through that kind of coverage, press coverage on the outside. I just feel like if once we start seeing Keon Coleman in the heavy slot, we can pretty much chalk it up that they're considering him not an outside receiver anymore. Even if it's just a spot duty in that position, I think it's kind of a concession to, oh, he's not going to get this skill set, so we got to do something else.
I know. And it clogs up the middle even more, too, because Josh Palmer, who was also MIA in that Miami game, he's so much more effective on dig routes into the middle of the field. Yeah. If you add Coleman to that equation, I get it. Just clogs up the middle.
Well, and that's it, too. They have too many options for that position because then you have Kincaid, even Knox and Shakir all look better in the slot than they do out, you know, than they ever would outside.
I know. But I know. They
need him to be an outside receiver. Like, that's why they haven't schemed him there. Cause they're just like, you got to do this job. Like, nobody else on this roster is able to do this for you. Tyrell Shavers is like a redemption project from the practice squad to just try to get something going there.
I get it. I know. Yeah. It feels like such a mismatch of skill to positionality. You know what I mean? But you're absolutely right. They need him to be this and they're going to force it even if it doesn't work. Right.
Yep.
All right, man, let's transition to the defense. I want to talk about defensive line after 3 weeks here. And there were some things I think we saw that you and I would both agree were concerning from the D-line in both the pass rush and run defense against Miami. So let's just start with the pass rush aspect of this defensive line after all that investment in the offseason. Zero sacks on Tua Tagovailoa in week 3. JJ, this pass rush at the defensive line, better, same, or worse than last year?
Somehow worse.
So it really right? is.
Like, I didn't think that you could put so much draft capital and signing Bosa and moving on from Von Miller into a defensive line and be worse. And like, that's not to say, I think we've both talked about it. Anybody who listens to the pod knows we love what Bosa has brought to the table. Just homie needs some help. And Greg Rousseau looks bad. Like, he just doesn't look good. He has not made an impact in multiple games now. He's been completely absent and absolutely not earning the contract they signed him to. And then the rooks in the defensive interior, like literally gold star to Joey Bosa for probably 70% of his snaps and to DaQuan Jones for about the same amount of his snaps. And then everybody else needs to be better because holy crap, they're just missing everything. Like, their pass rush is terrible.
Yeah, the pass rush in both pressure rate and total sacks recorded has taken a massive dip from last season. Massive dip from the same time last season. And they have not played, I would argue, I mean, listen, even Baltimore has issues along their offensive line. But they've played Baltimore, the Jets, who, you know, without Elijah Vera Tucker, and then the Miami Dolphins largely rolling out a backup offensive line in week 3. And zero sacks on Tua Tagovailoa, who in the 2 games prior had been sacked a combined 8 times. I mean, it's getting to the point where it is inexcusable. Inexcusable.
That's what I mean. It's like you look at that. We both guessed that they'd get over 3 sacks in the game against the Dolphins. They recorded 0 sacks, a few pressures, no QB hits. Like, are you kidding me? What are you doing?
How is that possible?
The only person I will point to that had a single rep that I thought was solid was Deion Walker. And so he's causing me to eat crow a little bit. I'm still not going to write him. I'm not going to draw him a card unless he shows up, because my deadline was week 4. Unless he absolutely crushes it against the Saints. Sorry, homie. No card for you. You didn't prove me wrong.
I think he's played. Listen, he's had a couple of reps where he's like been blown out of his cleats, right? There's no
promise. I didn't promise a card for somebody who's had some reps of good play and mostly bad.
I think on average, Walker's been one of the few shining stars on this particular defensive line. And listen, yes, we have to be mindful that Ed Oliver has only played 1 game up to this point, right? After literally single-handedly winning the game for the Buffalo Bills on the defensive side of the ball against Baltimore. So there is a school of thought that I get where you're putting rookies in Sanders and Walker in a position that they're not ready for yet. DeQuan Jones was washed last year. He looks washed this year. But you are having to rely on those wily veterans in DeQuan Jones and Joey Bosa at a much higher clip than you are ever hoping to. I mean, Bosa's playing 72% of all snaps right now. He's been great, but that's not sustainable.
No, it's just a countdown to his next giant season-ending injury.
Exactly. And the younger guys have not been put in a position where they can have been able to contribute right away. So yes, when Oliver comes back, it is going to make a big difference. And everyone keeps saying, well, you know, let's get to week six because we're going to get Larry Ogunjobi and Michael Hoyt back. And I think we are in trouble if the success of our defense hinges on both of those guys making major contributions. I like Hoyt as a chess piece. The Rams were able to do some really fun stuff with dime looks because of his versatility, but Ogunjobi was bad last year, and the Bills already play dime without Michael Hoyt there, right? So listen, it feels like the defensive line, similar to the Keon Coleman situation, you just need the guys that you put in those positions to hit their ceilings. You just got to
figure it out.
Feelings.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the biggest thing, and this is like, I feel like we're broken records. It's been like five seasons of the pod, and we've never been like, ha, finally, consistent defensive line play. What we've asked for half of a decade. You know, it's just like the last time the Bills had a defensive line that week to week to week made impacts in games was Rex Ryan. It was the Mario Williams years. That was it. Like
crazy. Yeah.
Mario Williams, Kyle Williams, you know, Marcel Darius, that whole cold front at that time, you know, Lorenzo Alexander, like that was the last time that I was like, oh, everything else can be absolute trash, but we can count on the defensive line showing up and making a positive impact and maybe stealing a possession or doing something. Right.
Yep. Absolutely. And I don't know, man. I mean, I think we've kind of bundled the rushing, the rush talk in with
this, but
it's the same. It is. Somehow maybe worse. I mean, when the Bills are playing light boxes at the lowest clip they have in the McDermott era, only about 37%, according to Next Gen Stats, on rushing attempts from opposing teams, but they are allowing. So light boxes, you need the defensive line to do work. On light boxes, when they deploy them, JJ, they're allowing 7 yards a carry, which is the fourth worst mark in the league. I mean, the defensive line through 3 weeks has been bad. And listen, the Saints are going to give us a lot of false metrics, I think, because that is not a good team. But if this Buffalo Bills defensive line struggles against Alvin Kamara and struggles against Spencer Rattler, you know, I think it is time to hit the panic button after 4 weeks of not great competition and the defensive line underachieving. All right.
Agreed.
Let's talk about the linebacker room. Terrell Bernard, Matt Milano. I had posited at the beginning of the season, should this be the season where Dorian Williams finally gets the start over Matt Milano because of the injury history, the sluggishness we saw when Milano came back last year? Milano had a pretty decent preseason, and then the season started. So JJ, let's talk about this linebacker room. Better, same, or worse from last year?
I want to say worse, but it's just the same, which is we are missing Matt Milano like usual. Terrell Bernard doesn't look great without Milano next to him. For some reason, that's like the absolute key to his performance is to have Matt Milano with him. And then, you know, I like Dorian Williams. He's done some nice things. I think Shaq Thompson has shown to be like a pretty solid veteran pickup. He's had some impact in games and in a spot fill-in type of role. I think it's perfect for him to do that. He's got some juice every time you see him on the field, but he doesn't play a lot of snaps, and I think that's proper. I mean, it's same, but I'm tempted to say worse because we're not seeing growth and development from Bernard or Williams. Like those guys haven't looked like they took, I would say even Keon Coleman has looked like he's made more of a step toward being a professional at his position than either of those linebackers.
Yes. And Bernard also, like Rousseau, beneficiary of a extension here in the offseason. You know, Dorian Williams, he's getting snap share. He's getting about 31% of the snap share out there, and you haven't seen a massive step from him. Like, you know what you're going to get when he's out there. He's going to bite on play action, but he's going to be a missile in the run game, which, as we have talked about in light boxes, Dorian Williams, if you look at a lot of film, he's the reason why the Buffalo Bills are only 7 yards per carry in light boxes, right, and not 12. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Like, he's really coming in and he's covering up a lot of mistakes. I mean, Williams is great as a run defender, but coverage, which is what the Bills asked their linebackers to do, still no real growth there. And, you know, Bernard, there is an argument to be made. He's playing well, but has he hit his ceiling, right? Is this the highest gear we're ever going to see out of him? Which is why I'm tempted, like you, to say same, because Milano looks kind of like he did last season, which is he's not always in the right position in run defense. They're using him to shoot the gap more in blitz situations, which the Bills are also doing at a higher level. Again, I do think as a rational-brained person, we need to hold final judgment until the Bills have all of their pieces back on defense that they're looking to deploy in this scheme and reevaluate come week 10 or week 11. But right now, it's not looking like massive steps have been taken by this defensive unit as compared to last year. All right, man, one more, and this is probably another one where it's like, well, we don't have all of our guys in, so who knows? But CB2, better, same, or worse from last year? We got Trey White taking on the Rasul Douglas role.
I mean, I'd say better. They've looked a little better, but they're giving up everything on third down still, right? Like, that's the same part. I would say the better part for me has been there's been more competitive pass breakups, and they're more competitive at the catch point than I think Rasul Douglas was providing last year. It's looked better in that regard. But the thing that it's tough because it's a mixed bag. We're getting better from Trey White than we did from Rasul Douglas, which is surprising for me to say, because I did not expect that. But we're getting worse from Benford, than from Benford, right? Like, he's not the kind of player that I would think takes it out of gear when he gets paid, but has just looked like he's gotten a rocky start because he didn't play very many snaps in the preseason. He has been in position all the time. Like, his, you know, expected yards after catch are super, they're like some of the lowest in the league. Like, he puts the guys on the ground if they catch a ball in his coverage, but he has let too many balls come into his coverage and be caught. And I think that's the big problem. He's looked like he's better in run fits. He has had some amazing run blitzes and blown up some plays. And that's awesome. I think those are the ones you point to and you say, okay, he's probably the best, if not top three, run defending corner in the league. And I think that's part of the reason he got paid, because that's something that Sean McDermott values so highly. But I think that I'm expecting more from his coverage. I'm confident it's going to happen because I think he's an excellent player. But yeah, I'm going to say same, but I'm tempted to say worse.
Yeah, I actually think same. I think there can be an argument for better too. But listen, it's a relative scale. Rasul Douglas last year was just smoked across the middle, and teams were killing Buffalo in the quick game. Tua in week 3 had his longest time to throw of the season. It was like 2.86 seconds, which for him is an eternity. This is a guy last year who got the ball out in 2.2 seconds. So the Bills coverage unit did what it needed to do and locked up those speedy wide receivers and Devon Achan for the requisite over 2.5 seconds that you need for your defensive line to then get pressure on the opposing QB. It's impossible to ask this defensive back seven to stay in coverage for almost 3 seconds. They're just not going to do it. They don't have the athletes to do it. I think part of this too, JJ, what we're seeing, and again, the argument I'm making is that it's better. The Bills are also playing left-handed on defense. They're not dropping back into that soft zone as much as they did last year, which is their bread and butter and the comfort level for a lot of those players, Benford and White included. They've had to blitz more. They've had to play more man because they're selling out to stop the run, right? Everything I think we've seen is a trickle down from the poor play and the poorest play of the defensive line. So in that context overall, I get Trey White's nearest defender ratings are not great, but he was staying with Jaylen Waddle. He was staying with Tyreek Hill, staying with Devon Achane out of the backfield for as long as you would expect a player of his caliber to do and then some. Yes, he broke down his nearest defender, but that was only after the defensive line failed to do their job and get to Tua in 2.5 seconds, right? Or let Tua break contain, which
Tua roll out and break contain. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I you know, that's an excellent point that I was thinking of as you were speaking too, is like, we can't even rate the CB unit or the safeties either to that regard when it comes to coverage, because we know the defense is predicated on the pass rush and coverage working together. That's why the one exceptional play against the Dolphins where Deion Walker had a good pass rush rep was the play where Terrell Bernard intercepted the ball, right? Like, that's what that's what they talk to. That's how Sean McDermott has been top 10 in 5 or 10 straight years of takeaway percentage, right? Like, it's because his defense is built so that everything kind of works as a unit together. Be your 111th, right? And I think that the back seven are now having to play, you know, two of the 11ths each, because
right,
the front five aren't doing it. My math is all over the place on that, but it holds.
It does. My kids are working on fractions for homework right now. I will double check this and put any corrections in the show notes box.
Thank your children for me.
I will. Absolutely. All right, JJ, I think we've alluded to this, but I want to bundle it together. I want to talk about third down, because this was a point of contention for the Bills and their need to fix here. Third down this season, JJ, and in specifically third and long situations, third and seven, right? Better, same, or worse from last year?
It's hard. It's better because Josh Allen knows where to go with the ball. Worse because there's nowhere to go with the ball on those like critical downs, right? Like, nobody's doing him favors of getting in position. And then he also is reluctant to run to get some of those. There are some third down conversions he could have made with his legs, but I think through coaching and through his own intuition, he's choosing not to take those hits because he knows it's not this isn't the sellout time of the year yet. And so he's playing a little bit smarter with the football, which I think is good, but I think it's hurting the offense in some ways.
Yeah, the Buffalo Bills third down offense, and again, for a team that is scoring 30 points a game regularly against their opponents, you wouldn't think this was a problem. But their third and long offense is currently sitting at 18th in the league at EPA per play at -0.02. Teams are in the average separation rate for a wide receiver room goes down by almost a half yard. Teams, and we saw this with Miami, again, with a backup secondary, they were able to blanket our pass catchers in third and long situations, force Josh to hold on to the ball. His time to throw in these third and long situations is like 3.8 seconds. Like, there's just nothing available for him in his first or even his second window. Is it a failure of talent? Is it a failure of structure? I don't know. The Bills are still a top seven unit in explosive plays, but it's coming from Josh operating out of the structure of the offense. Nothing that the offensive scheme itself is creating. And then you have James Cook. The explosives are coming in the run game by and large as well. So third down offense for the Buffalo Bills, I think, is a sneaky problem. And one that we saw really persist deep into last season as the competition got better in the postseason. Teams just, they do not fear this pass catcher room at all in those situations.
Yeah, they definitely, I mean, most teams are willing to go man up with anybody that the Bills are putting out there and just let it ride, right? Add as much help to the pass rush as they want.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. All right, JJ, I think after 3 weeks, listen, there's a lot of positives about this team, and then there's a lot of stuff that I think we still have some concerns about heading into week three. If the Bills blow out the Saints, and let's segue into the Saints preview here. If the Bills blow out the Saints, I don't know that it gives me any more optimism for the issues that we've identified here, because the Saints, I don't think, are a great litmus test for that. Yeah. You know what I mean? But if the Bills struggle against the Saints, I do think it is time to hit the alarm button. So where do you want to start? You want to start offense or defense here?
Let's start the Saints offense versus the Bills defense, because I think defense is the greater concern that I have right now. And I think that these Saints are, so Chris Olave and Alvin Kamara and their center Eric McCoy, end of list when it comes to talent on offense, right? Like, they have some good, I mean, we know Brandon Cooks, he's late career Brandon Cooks at this point. Rashid Shaheed is so fast, and he, I think, could give the Bills problems just because of this. That's a skill set that Bills sometimes struggle with, but I'm not afraid of most of their line. I'm not afraid of Juwan Johnson at tight end. Spencer Rattler, the notes I have from watching all of the Saints games this season are, let's see, Rattler, yikes, not a real QB yet. Justin Fields is a better thrower. Rattler will run straight backwards, which we see in young quarterbacks, right? Like he doesn't have a plan when he scrambles and will run straight backwards with no actual way to get out of it. He has one of the highest interception worthy play percentage or interception worthy throw percentages in the league. He can be told where to throw it. If you set your coverage in a certain way, you can funnel passes to like the flanks all day long and then just cover them up and rally to the football. And he's getting his receivers absolutely tattooed on the play all the time. Like, I'm surprised more of their pass catchers are not crippled right now, because that dude throws a ball directly in front of somebody with the defender closing on them at full speed with the kind of touch that the ball's going to reach the person at the same time the defender does, and they're going to absolutely get blown up. This is the problem I have as a Bills fan, though. I feel like he's going to show up in Buffalo and people are going to be like, oh my gosh, Spencer Rattler, who knew he's the hottest young quarterback in the league, because the Bills are going to play down. And he's going to just somehow, you know, tear him apart for a few quarters. And then the Bills are going to have to win it with a last second field goal. And I'm going to like poop my pants.
You went through so many emotions on the Spencer Rattler breakdown.
There you go.
Unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
I just wanted to get through, like, I think he's bad, but I don't think it matters because the Bills do this to me all the time. That's my anxiety.
I know. Whenever they face a team, and, you know, part of this is, I don't know if it's true or not, but the Bills in the McDermott era have had a tendency to play down to their competition sometimes. This feels like it should be different with Josh's leadership on the field, but they have absolutely not melded in games. That's not the right way to say it, but they have struggled against opponents that a team that is this good with this many aspirations in this type of track record should not struggle against. And the Saints reek of one of those teams, which you're absolutely right about Spencer Rattler. I mean, DVOA this season amongst all qualifying QBs, -4.3%, a total EPA -7.36, EPA per dropback, -0.05. Every time Spencer Rattler is touching the ball for this particular team, it is literally costing them points statistically. He has, to your point, had a high amount of turnover worthy throws, despite the fact that he's not throwing into a bunch of tight windows. He's got an elite pass catcher and an elite running back who catches passes at a high clip out of the backfield, right? I don't know. He kind of looks like the Will Levis of this season, I think we've both said. So, I mean, there is that aspect to his game too, where some of it looks good, but on the overall, he looks like he is not a competitive NFL QB. But this is exactly the type of the situation where you've got a reeling Bills defense. This should be a get right game for them, but there is something in the back of our head that says because they have the kryptonite to this Bills D, which is an elite wide receiver and an elite running back who can catch passes out of the backfield, two things that the Bills have always struggled to defend. Because of that, you're like, there's a puncher's chance here. There's a puncher's chance that at least the offense for the Saints might get going, right?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's flip to the defensive side of the ball here, JJ, or rather our offensive side of the ball.
Yes.
Josh Allen versus the Saints defense that is going to be missing Chase Young for the fourth consecutive game here. Arguably their best pass rusher, somebody who they brought to the squad last year on a one-year deal, inked him to a longer-term contract this year, and unfortunately has not been able to get on the field for them. JJ, what do you expect from Josh in this offensive unit against the Saints?
So some of the things that I observed all of the Saints games up to this point in the season, and I believe that they're, you know, Cam Jordan and Carl Granderson are both good. I think Granderson is sort of underrated in the league, and then Cam Jordan is certainly late in his career, but still can make such an impact in the run game. The Saints do not have very good players, just kind of across the board. They are struggling. They're talent deficient in a lot of positions, but they've got some positives. I think Kool-Aid McKinstry out of Alabama, second year corner, has looked plucky. He gets flagged. He definitely misses some coverage assignments, but he also looks super competitive at the catch point. He has been sticking his nose in it in the run game. I think those are some good things. Demario Davis is a player that I respect quite a lot. He has been very good this season. He's been the kind of sole bright point of that defense when it comes to, you know, helping them across the middle. But my notes, you know, on the Saints D is that tight ends can make some noise. They have a serious weakness to running quarterbacks when breaking contain. They were giving up Kyler Murray all kinds of space, right? Like, they were not being disciplined when rushing him. They were not compression style rushing him. So he had plenty of places to leak out and make some first downs. And again, I think that, you know, Josh Allen might be protecting himself a little bit and trying for the throw first. But if he's pressed and if they need it, and I'm sure he'll have some lanes. But yeah, I think it's they play a lot of cover three. So they have a single high safety and their CBs are dropping deep. And so there's definitely going to be some room in the middle for crossing routes, tight ends up the seams. And they do utilize a lot of five man pressures and some mixed front looks. So it could be a little bit difficult in the run game and in pass pro, but nothing the Bills haven't really handily taken care of with other opponents. I think that's the one thing that's interesting and positive for the Bills on offense is that the Saints play a style of defense that's pretty consistent to some of the other teams in the AFC East specifically and teams that they've excelled against in the past.
Yeah, man. I mean, according to NFL Next Gen Stats, the Saints defense rolled out zone on 91% of its defensive snaps in week three. This is a team that relies heavily on their zone coverages, mixes up their fronts within those packages. And Josh, we know he's been really good against zone, but it doesn't bode well for me for this being the game where the Bills find explosive plays in structure, because again, and it's either personnel, it's scheme, it's both. I feel like we've said this 1,000 times on this pod. They are just not a team that has figured out how to solve this particular type of defense, not to be effective, because they're going to pick it apart. Josh is at that stage of his career where he is absolutely going to moderate this thing downfield in any way that he can. But when it comes to shot plays and things like that, the Saints defense is very adverse to trying to give those things up. And I think it may be a struggle for the Bills to get those explosives, but not a struggle for this Bills squad to score points. And again, I think it's going to be a heavy James Cook game, without a doubt.
Yeah, James Cook is going to be exceptional, I think, against this team, because the Bills are like the best zone running team in the league, and this defense is susceptible to that style of running.
Yeah, I wonder if this is one of those games where, like the Dallas game a couple of years ago, where Josh throws the ball like 19.
Where Josh is part of the group presentation, and his role is the question slide at the end.
Exactly. But I would expect a big day from James Cook with this, without a doubt. I mean, yeah, it's just the Buffalo Bills currently number one in overall rushing efficiency. The Saints defense, number 14. I mean, that is advantage. That is advantage Buffalo Bills, without a doubt. All right, man. Prediction sure to go wrong?
Yeah, sure.
Go for it.
I have a game preview and then I got a prop. I think that the Bills handle business. They're like 15 points favorites in this game.
14 and a half. So they opened as 16 and a half point favorites on this. Right. But slid. You've seen a lot of public money come in on the Saints to cover.
Right.
The Bills just don't play a style of offense or defense that's conducive to 16 point wins. So
right.
I think that's what the betting public is saying.
Yeah, so I'm going to say that the Bills do win this one. I think they get over 31 points again. I think it's Bills 35, Saints like 18. Like, I think it's going to be a weird kind of, it's going to be a game that we feel icky about until like the second half when it starts to stretch itself out. And then we're really going to be like, okay, we've got this, right? So I think it's going to be the kind of game that's way closer in the first half than we'd want it to be. But then some Spencer Rattler mistakes bring it way more in the Bills' favor late.
Yeah, without a doubt. I agree. I think this is going to be one of those Bills games where the first half we're like, what the hell is happening? Spencer Rattler is going to extend some drives on third and long because, you know, the Bills have proven they cannot stop those third and long situations. And I think it's going to be closer than Vegas thinks it's going to be. I'm going to go Bills. I mean, every time I say they're not going to score 30, they score 30. Bills 28. And I would say Saints 17. I think the Saints will cover, but I think it's going to be a much closer game for comfort than a lot of us want here at week four in the season. And then you're going to see, listen, man, you're going to start to see the calls for Michael Hoyt and Larry Ogunjobi to come back, because that's going to solve the defense.
That's right? The answer.
Right. All right, JJ, prop bet. What do you got?
So my prop is actually, it is a sack prop Deion Walker over 0.5 sacks.
Well, I'm going to take the over.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to take the over.
Because I don't know. I think he's due. I think he's been pitiful in run defense, but he's shown some solid reps here and there and pass, you know, brush, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And I know this is a relatively low bar, but he has been our number two best interior defensive lineman next to Ed Oliver. He's come through in high leverage moments, but also, I mean, when you look at his pressure metrics, they're not bad. Not bad for a fourth round pick.
Pretty okay. Yeah. How about you? Any props?
I do. Yes, I do. And you know, this is with regard to explosive plays for the Bills. Over under JJ, Keon Coleman, 1.5 catches for 20 or more yards.
Over. I'm gonna hit the over because Coleman, I think this is the type of the coverage unit that the Saints have is the type of coverage unit in terms of size and skill set that you could see somebody like Keon Coleman hitting a couple of bigger plays against. You know, I think Justin Reed at safety for the Saints, we know very well from his time with the Chiefs, is a excellent kind of downhill run plugger and does some good work covering a deep zone, but can be had in contested catch situations, certainly. And so I think we see some things. So over under 1.5, 20-yard plus plays, I'm going to say over for Keon Coleman.
Yeah, if not now, when? You know right. what I mean? Which is why I'm putting this prop out there. But this should be a game where everything that ails the Bills gets a little bit better. It's not going to be structurally better because we know the level of competition is what it is, but this should be a game where, especially on extended rest, the Bills come out and they are specifically working on the things that they have struggled with this season. And I would expect there to be some in-structure shot plays going to Keon Coleman, maybe out of that 13 personnel set that we've been seeing. Maybe this is the week where we unlock a little bit of that play action shot down the field to Coleman out of that set. So we'll see how it goes. But I also am going to take the over more for hope than anything else we have statistically discussed.
Hope over. Yeah.
Yeah. If not now, when? Yeah. It's the hopium over. The hopium over. That's where we're at. All right, JJ. We did final scores. We did props. Anything else here before we wrap up?
No, you know, I think this is exactly the type of game, as I mentioned before, that you should be handily the Bills. The talent does not even comparable between the two squads, but you know, they got to roll that thing out there and play it.
Yep. We'll see how it goes. All right. For all of you listening at home, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Google, Apple, Spotify, and as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.